It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Hey, welcome to the program with Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell joining us this morning. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
We're doing well.
Good.
What shall we talk about today?
Ben, let's talk about a topic that we have mentioned here on the program before, but I'd like to kind of review it. Ben, the perfect scenario is that a son or daughter, granddaughter, grandson, whoever your important person in your life happens to be as we get older, that they take a well-drafted power of attorney to your banking institute, your banking institution, excuse mm-hmm. me, and register that power of attorney and begin, pursuant to that power of attorney, to pay your bills.
Mm-hmm.
There is then a good record of what they are paying on your behalf. And they are not the owner of your account.
Right.
They simply are the agent, the duly recorded agent that has access to your accounts in order to continue the status quo,
mm-hmm.
pay your bills, do whatever else is necessary relative to your account. Now, this is really, I hasten to say, Ben, how it should be. This is getting an A-plus in the classroom
mm-hmm.
if our clients and our citizens would do it in this manner. Unfortunately, what happens is that folks believe that they need to put the name of their child or their caregiver on their account.
Right.
They need to add them as an owner. They don't really realize that they're adding them as an owner.
Mm-hmm.
They think that they're just, quote, putting them on their account.
Just giving them permission.
So that they can pay their bills.
Right. And there's, you know, it's a problem here, Cecil, is part of the common language. Just saying, I'm going to put you on the account so you can pay the bills.
Correct. And unfortunately, what happens is that the account then is re-registered in the name of the citizen and their loved one, and almost without exception, it is then made joint with right of survivorship or payable on death to that particular caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, as one can imagine, the fire is set for there to be a problem.
Right.
And we are seeing this so routinely in our office that I, again today, bring this to the radio program because it is really probably one of the number one issues that we're having to address week after week after week. And many times, Ben, it is not just a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
It is a stock account
mm-hmm.
at a brokerage firm. It is a very large CD or even a very large bank account. You know, the elderly do, when they are able to be, when they are secure financially, mm-hmm. if you will, Ben.
Right.
And I know that's all relative. But again, a textbook, scenario for a fairly secure, elder person is a right large checking account.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know what is right large, and I understand that, but you know, it's not unusual for someone to have a 40, 50,000, 70, 80,000, you know, 25,000, any of those numbers are large to me,
mm-hmm.
checking account.
Right.
A lot of your retired people who can afford it
mm-hmm.
have a large checking or money market account. And then yes, they do have maybe a portfolio with some sort of stock company, you know, a investment advisor group, okay? But they also have at one of the banks a fairly significant account. And so now all of a sudden their child, who's their power of attorney, somehow goes to the bank to put themselves on the account, and rather than just simply being registered as an agent, mm-hmm. as a power of attorney, the account is changed.
Right.
And the ownership is changed, and it is then payable on death or time on death or joint with right of survivorship to that particular child. This then, of course, as I said before, sets the stage for there to be what could have otherwise been a very straightforward file to now become a very complex and expensive file.
So there's two things really at work here. One is just someone putting their name on the account, and so while someone is still living, their name is on it. They could the other person, something happens to them, there's awfully tempting to go and drain that account. And then the other is the payable on death. When you intended to distribute these mm-hmm. funds to a number of surviving relatives, and then all of a sudden it goes in the hands of only one.
That is true, but that is only part of,
right.
Ben, the issues that we see. Again, I have to hasten to say that a lot of times these accounts are re-registered when in fact they are, you know, stock accounts,
mm-hmm.
and they are $200,000-$300,000 accounts or larger, payable on death or time on death to a particular child. We have a file like that right now in the office where all of those resources are on date of death, payable to that particular child. He does not intend to keep all of those funds,
mm-hmm.
and yet there is no way for him to gift them back to his brothers and sisters without there being gift tax consequences.
Right.
So that is a file where, fortunately, the heart is in the right place. The client who has the account that was registered time on death is wanting to get it back to the other heirs of the estate in an equitable and equal way,
mm-hmm.
but is having legal issues, tax issues, we have been confronted with, which we otherwise would not have been, I might add.
Right.
Okay, this would not even been an hour spent on this file. Now, rather than spending, you know, not even an hour on it, we're spending days on it,
mm-hmm.
because of the tax ramifications of this child needing to get this very large stock account divided back between his brothers and sisters. Now, the time on death and payable on death designation, which as an estate lawyer, which is what I am, I quite frankly wish that it never even existed, or that if it did exist, there had to be some sort of independent court order to make it exist.
Right.
I mean, I am seeing a whole lot more problems with this, Ben,
mm-hmm.
than solutions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, having been here for years listening to us here on the radio program, this is the third or fourth time that I've used the morning to discuss this particular subject matter. Now, part of the reason is that the client is very anxious to avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
And they somehow get information from somewhere that if they will make their accounts payable on death to their children or time on death to their children, then it will avoid the probate process. Well, first of all, North Carolina is about as friendly a probate state as we have in the United States of America. We are probably top on the list,
right.
in terms of just ease of probate. There's no delay. There's very little cost involved. There are friendly and competent clerks of court that will help you through a lot of the filings. It is not a burdensome process like it is in Michigan, New York, Florida, California, Texas, Indiana, many, many different states who, of course, have different kinds of probate laws.
And a lot of our folks that are here now move from there.
They do. They come from these other states, some of them, and they realize that in those states, the probate laws are burdensome and onerous, and that there's local taxation and local kinds of percentages that the attorneys must charge and that the court must charge. And as a result of this, it can become very expensive. This just simply is not the way it is in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot emphasize this enough. And in North Carolina, our probate process is very summary, very simple, very straightforward. Yes, there are certain times that you need some I's dotted and T's crossed by a lawyer. There are some very large estates or ongoing businesses that need the assistance of a lawyer. But an awful lot of the estates, the majority of the estates are done without the use of an attorney. Now, but the client hears that I've got to avoid this process.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'll make my stock account time on death or payable on death, then I'll avoid that process. Well, by doing that, they also avoid all of the safeguards that are in place under North Carolina law to see that the estate is properly handled. How are the creditors going to get paid?
Right.
How is the funeral going to be paid? How are the assets going to be assuredly divided equally between the children? And the list really kind of just goes on and on and on. By avoiding the court system, we create more problems.
Mm-hmm.
In North Carolina many times than we solve problems because of naming the account payable on death or time on death. What I wish would happen is that before these forms are filled out with the brokerage firms and the banking firms, that there would be kind of a pause, if you will.
Right.
And an inquiry, well, have you discussed this with your lawyer? Is this consistent with your will, with your trust, if in fact you have one? Why don't you take these forms first to your attorney and have them review them? But of course, Ben, you know, folks are sometimes a little afraid to come talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
They're afraid they're going to get a big bill.
Part of the reason why we're here. Yeah.
Okay. And so we don't get put in the loop. But I'm here today, gratuitously talking to mm-hmm. the general public about this and trying to give information out there, which is the purpose of our program here, Ben. And I am just saying that this is a real problem that we see not just once or twice, but usually several times a week.
All right. We'll talk about some ways to avoid this coming up in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell, our guest. And if you would like to call in, you can call us right now.
Call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, online at harvellandcollins.com. And Cecil Harvell is with us here today talking about payable on death and the other types of accounts.
Ben, there really are, a couple of different, several different stages to good, sound estate planning. And, of course, the first, of course, obviously, is meeting with the client and getting the facts very clearly outlined, and then making a document that tailors to their objectives and their wants.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, of course, is absolutely, without fail, affirming and confirming the designation of their accounts, the beneficiaries of their assets. Most all clients now many times have a retirement account, an IRA, maybe a 401k, a SARSEP. It doesn't matter which kind of retirement account it happens to be. But all of those accounts, Ben, as you know, pass by beneficiary. And, you know, it's very important that the beneficiary designation form be looked at and be reviewed as part of the estate planning process
mm-hmm.
to make sure that it is consistent, again, with the objective of the client. We certainly don't want, you know, the left hand to go out three ways and the right hand,
right.
You know, we don't know where it's going at all. Maybe it doesn't have a beneficiary designation form or beneficiaries properly designated, or it's designated in the wrong way. We have to keep in mind that annuities, life insurance policies, 401ks, IRAs, all of those kinds of assets pass by beneficiary designation. And so we need to review those things. That's part of the job of a good estate planning lawyer, to help their client review those forms and make sure that they are consistent with the objective of the estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
And what we also are finding is now an added issue for us to address is, well, we've reviewed all these beneficiary designation forms. We've got them accurate. Now you need to go to the bank. You need to go to the stock company. You need to go everywhere else. And let's address whether or not any of your accounts by accident
mm-hmm.
have gotten put time on death or payable on death.
Right.
Because if they have, they could potentially be inconsistent with your estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so getting the document done is really just the first step.
Right.
We really do need to look at these other kinds of ways. I call them, you know, you're rewriting your will.
Mm-hmm.
You literally are rewriting your will
without knowing it
at the bank
yeah.
or right. at the stock company or wherever you happen to be
mm-hmm.
where you sign these forms that make things a certain way. You've got to first have some consultation with the lawyer who drafted your will.
Now you talk about North Carolina also being an easier probate state than the many, many other states, if not almost all of them. So if somebody has a will that was drafted in another state, do they need to have it rewritten in North Carolina for that to apply?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. And the answer to that question is that when we look at a will from a different state than any state, really, Virginia, South Carolina, Florida,
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania, usually when you review it, you see that it incorporates in the statutes of that particular state,
mm-hmm.
that it directs the executor to settle the estate consistent with the laws of Pennsylvania or South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that we modify that in some way so that the will is consistently interpreted with the laws of the state of North Carolina.
But this is where they reside. Right?
Correct. And so that is something that we routinely do. It is important to say, though, Ben, that if a will from another state
mm-hmm.
conforms with our law, mm-hmm. our requirements,
mm-hmm.
which are that it have two witnesses, two independent witnesses, and hopefully that those witnesses, as well as the testator, the person signing the will,
mm-hmm.
sign the three of them, if you will, now, in the presence of a notary, then that will be a self-proving will, and it will be admitted to our courts in North Carolina.
So it would be probated here.
It will be admitted here, and it can be probated here. Even though it says, you know, it's to be probated consistent with the laws of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
It has two witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's signed by the testator. They signed in the presence of a notary. And so therefore it meets the North Carolina legal requirement
mm-hmm.
to be admitted to a probate court. So it would be admitted in our state, and then we would go about the task of settling the estate, but it will not necessarily that will, because it was drafted in a different state
mm-hmm.
and it's calling out for the laws to apply in that state. We could potentially run into what's known as a conflict in laws
mm-hmm.
Issue. And if we did, then it would need to be resolved. So in other words, even though the estate will proceed in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
it would not necessarily proceed without there being some delay, some extra cost, some issues to resolve, which, again, the goal of all of our good clients, all of the good people who are listening to this program, even if they aren't clients, is to have an estate that is settled promptly, without a lot of delay, without a lot of extra cost.
So the best thing is to just come in and write a new will.
Is to have it looked at in the state of North Carolina and to have it conform with the North Carolina statutes and incorporate those statutes by reference in the will.
Okay. All right. We'll have more to come in just a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell here from Harvell and Collins. Again, talking about making that will conform.
Yeah.
So then you move on to the other paperwork as well, too. So you look at the other things.
And last but not least, just in the last few minutes, since we were on this subject today, Ben, most law firms handle getting a will done in the following way. You call the law firm and you make an appointment. And you go by and you sit down with the law firm or the lawyer and you give all of your facts and your circumstances. You don't have to take a whole lot of information.
Right.
That's kind of a misnomer that you've got to spend 2 or 3 weeks gathering up everything. Mm-hmm. Take what you maybe think you want to take, but really, to tell you the truth, you don't really need to take much of anything other than just simply your knowledge. Most people know who their heirs are. They know generally where their assets happen to be, what property land they happen to own, and we're able to kind of begin the process at that point. There's usually no charge for this initial consultation. There certainly isn't at our office, and I think that that's the case at most good law firms, that this is an initial consultation. Then there's the lawyer, after they know the circumstances a little bit, you know, do we have minor children where a trust is going to be involved? You know, do we have, you know, assets that are in another country, in another state? The lawyer will know the circumstances. They're able to generally give the client a quote as to what the attorney fee will be.
Right.
They certainly are able to give them a range of price. If they're not able to give them exact price, they're able to give them some sort of range. And then, of course, the client has the option to either accept the fact that they want this lawyer to proceed, or to say to themselves, well, no, I'm going to go talk to another lawyer, get another opinion. You know, the process is not as difficult. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not as difficult as one might think. It's a fairly straightforward process, and I encourage all of our listeners to go through that process. Having a will is a very, very important thing to have.
So get that done.
Absolutely.
And with that, once you get that done, the other things start to fall in place,
too. Particularly, always get a will. But the more, you know, the more wonderful your life is, like, for instance, the more marriages you've had, the more children you've had from prior marriages, et cetera, things like that, make it all the more important to kind of get things ironed out and laid down on paper.
All right. If you want to find out more about how to do that, you want to get in touch with the folks at Harvell and Collins, the right advice at the right time, at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.
A right large checking account. And you know, I don't know what is right large, and I understand that, but you know, it's not unusual for someone to have a 40, 50,000, 70, 80,000, you know, 25,000, any of those numbers are large to me, checking account.
Right.
A lot of your retired people who can afford it have a large checking or money market account. And then yes, they do have maybe a portfolio with some sort of stock company, you know, a investment advisor group, okay? But they also have at one of the banks a fairly significant account. And so now all of a sudden their child, who's their power of attorney, somehow goes to the bank to put themselves on the account, and rather than just simply being registered as an agent, as a power of attorney, the account is changed.
Right.
And the ownership has changed. And it is then payable on death or time on death or joint with right of survivorship to that particular child. This then, of course, as I said before, sets the stage for there to be what could have otherwise been a very straightforward file to now become a very complex and expensive file.
So there's two things really at work here. One is just someone putting their name on the account, and so while someone is still living, their name is on it. They could the other person, if something happens to them, there's awfully tempting to go and drain that account. And then the other is the payable on death. When you intended to distribute these mm-hmm. funds to a number of surviving relatives, and then all of a sudden it goes in the hands of only one.
That is true, and that is only part of,
right.
Ben, the issues that we see. Again, I have to hasten to say that a lot of times these accounts are re-registered when in fact they are, you know, stock accounts,
mm-hmm.
and they are $200,000-$300,000 accounts or larger, payable on death or time on death to a particular child. We have a file like that right now in the office where all of those resources are on date of death, payable to that particular child. He does not intend to keep all of those funds,
mm-hmm.
and yet there is no way for him to gift them back to his brothers and sisters without there being gift tax consequences.
Right.
So that is a file where, fortunately, the heart is in the right place. The client who has the account that was registered time on death is wanting to get it back to the other heirs of the estate in an equitable and equal way,
mm-hmm.
but is having legal issues, tax issues, we have been confronted with, which we otherwise would not have been, I might add.
Right.
Okay, this would not even been an hour spent on this file. Now, rather than spending, you know, not even an hour on it, we're spending days on it
mm-hmm.
because of the tax ramifications of this child needing to get this very large stock account divided back between his brothers and sisters. Now, the time on death and payable on death designation, which as an estate lawyer, which is what I am, I quite frankly wish that it never even existed, or that if it did exist, there had to be some sort of independent court order to make it exist.
Right.
I mean, I am seeing a whole lot more problems with this, Ben,
mm-hmm.
than solutions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, having been here for years listening to us here on the radio program, this is the third or fourth time that I've used the morning to discuss this particular subject matter. Now, part of the reason is that the client is very anxious to avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
And they somehow get information from somewhere that if they will make their accounts payable on death to their children or time on death to their children, then it will avoid the probate process. Well, first of all, North Carolina is about as friendly a probate state as we have in the United States of America. We are probably top on the list,
right,
in terms of just ease of probate. There's no delay. There's very little cost involved. There are friendly and competent clerks of court that will help you through a lot of the filings. It is not a burdensome process like it is in Michigan, New York, Florida, California, Texas, Indiana, many, many different states who, of course, have different kinds of probate laws.
And a lot of our folks that are here now move from there.
They do. They come from these other states, some of them, and they realize that in those states, the probate laws are burdensome and onerous and that there's local taxation and local kinds of percentages that the attorneys must charge and that the court must charge. And as a result of this, it can become very expensive. This just simply is not the way it is in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot emphasize this enough. And in North Carolina, our probate process is very summary, very simple, very straightforward. Yes, there are certain times that you need some I's dotted and T's crossed by a lawyer. There are some very large estates or ongoing businesses that need the assistance of a lawyer. But an awful lot of the estates, the majority of the estates are done without the use of an attorney. Now, but the client hears that I've got to avoid this process.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'll make my stock account time on death or payable on death, then I'll avoid that process. Well, by doing that, they also avoid all of the safeguards that are in place under North Carolina law to see that the estate is properly handled. How are the creditors going to get paid?
Right.
How is the funeral going to be paid? How are the assets going to be assuredly divided equally between the children? And the list really kind of just goes on and on and on. By avoiding the court system, we create more problems in North Carolina many times than we solve problems because of naming the account payable on death or time on death. What I wish would happen is that before these forms are filled out with the brokerage firms and the banking firms, that there would be kind of a pause, if you will.
Right.
And an inquiry. Well, have you discussed this with your lawyer? Is this consistent with your will, with your trust, if in fact you have one? Why don't you take these forms first to your attorney and have them review them? But of course, Ben, you know, folks are sometimes a little afraid to come talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
They're afraid they're going to get a big bill.
Part of the reason why we're here. Yeah.
Okay. And so we don't get put in the loop. But I'm here today, you know, gratuitously talking to the general public about this and trying to give information out there, which is the purpose of our program here, Ben. And I am just saying that this is a real problem that we see not just once or twice, but usually several times a week.
All right. We'll talk about some ways to avoid this coming up in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell, our guest. And if you would like to call in, you can call us right now.
Call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, online at harvellandcollins.com. And Cecil Harvell is with us here today talking about payable on death and the other types of accounts.
Ben, there really are, you know, several different stages to good, sound estate planning. And of course, the first, of course, obviously, is meeting with the client and getting the facts, very clearly outlined, and then making a document that tailors to their objectives and their wants. And then lastly, of course, is absolutely without fail affirming and confirming the designation of their accounts, the beneficiaries of their assets. Most all clients now many times have a retirement account, an IRA, maybe a 401k, a SARSEP. It doesn't matter which kind of retirement account it happens to be. But all of those accounts, Ben, as you know, pass by beneficiary. And, you know, it's very important that the beneficiary designation form be looked at and be reviewed as part of the estate planning process to make sure that it is consistent, again, with the objective of the client. We certainly don't want, you know, the left hand to go out three ways and the right hand, you know, we don't know where it's going at all. Maybe it doesn't have a beneficiary designation form or beneficiaries properly designated, or it's designated in the wrong way. We have to keep in mind that annuities, life insurance policies, 401ks, IRAs, all of those kinds of assets pass by beneficiary designation. And so we need to review those things. That's part of the job of a good estate planning lawyer, to help their client review those forms and make sure that they are consistent with the objective of the estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
And what we also are finding is now an added issue for us to address is, well, we've reviewed all these beneficiary designation forms. We've got them accurate. Now you need to go to the bank. You need to go to the stock company. You need to go everywhere else. And let's address whether or not any of your accounts by accident
mm-hmm.
have gotten put time on death or payable on death.
Right.
Because if they have, they could potentially be inconsistent with your estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so getting the document done is really just the first step.
Right. Right.
We really do need to look at these other kinds of ways. I call them, you know, you're rewriting your will.
Mm-hmm.
You literally are rewriting your will
without knowing it
at the bank
yeah.
or
right.
at the stock company or wherever you happen to be
mm-hmm.
where you sign these forms that make things a certain way. You've got to first have some consultation with the lawyer who drafted your will.
Now you talk about North Carolina also being an easier probate state than many other states, if not almost all of them. So if somebody has a will that was drafted in another state, do they need to have it rewritten in North Carolina for that to apply?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. And the answer to that question is that when we look at a will from a different state than any state, really, Virginia, South Carolina, Florida,
mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania, usually when you review it, you see that it incorporates in the statutes of that particular state,
mm-hmm.
that it directs the executor to settle the estate consistent with the laws of Pennsylvania or South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that we modify that in some way so that the will is consistently interpreted with the laws of the state of North Carolina.
But this is where they reside.
Right? Correct. And so that is something that we routinely do. It is important to say, though, Ben, that if a will from another state
mm-hmm.
conforms with our law, mm-hmm. our requirements,
mm-hmm.
which are that it have two witnesses, two independent witnesses, and hopefully that those witnesses, as well as the testator, the person signing the will,
mm-hmm.
sign the three of them, if you will, now, in the presence of a notary, then that will be a self-proving will, and it will be admitted to our courts in North Carolina.
So it would be probated here.
It will be admitted here, and it can be probated here. Even though it says, you know, it's to be probated consistent with the laws of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
It has two witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's signed by the testator. They signed in the presence of a notary. And so therefore it meets the North Carolina legal requirement
mm-hmm.
to be admitted to a probate court. So it would be admitted in our state. And then we would go about the task of settling the estate, but it will not necessarily that will, because it was drafted in a different state
mm-hmm.
and it's calling out for the laws to apply in that state. We could potentially run into what's known as a conflict in laws
mm-hmm.
Issue. And if we did, then it would need to be resolved. So in other words, even though the estate will proceed in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
it would not necessarily proceed without there being some delay, some extra cost, some issues to resolve, which, again, the goal of all of our good clients, all of the good people who are listening to this program, even if mm-hmm. they aren't clients, is to have an estate that is settled promptly, without a lot of delay,
mm-hmm.
without a lot of extra cost.
So the best thing is to just come in and write a new will.
Is to have it looked at in the state of North Carolina
mm-hmm.
and to have it conform with the North Carolina statutes and incorporate those statutes by reference in the will.
Okay. All right. We'll have more to come in just a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell here from Harvell and Collins. Again, talking about making that will conform.
Yeah.
So then you move on to the other paperwork as well, too. So you look at the other things.
And last but not least, just in the last few minutes, since we were on this subject today, Ben, most law firms handle getting a will done in the following way. You call the law firm and you make an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And you go by and you sit down with the law firm or the lawyer and you give all of your facts and your circumstances. You don't have to take a whole lot of information.
Right.
That's kind of a misnomer that you've got to spend 2 or 3 weeks gathering up everything. Mm-hmm. Take what you maybe think you want to take, but really, to tell you the truth, you don't really need to take much of anything mm-hmm. other than just simply your knowledge. Mm-hmm. Most people know who their heirs are.
Mm-hmm.
They know generally where their assets happen to be,
mm-hmm.
what property land they happen to own,
mm-hmm.
and we're able to kind of begin the process at that point. There's usually no charge for this initial consultation. There certainly mm-hmm. isn't at our office, and I think that that's the case at most good law firms, that this is an initial consultation. Then there's the lawyer, after they know the circumstances a little
mm-hmm.
bit,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
do we have minor children where a trust is going to be involved? You know, do we have, you know, assets that are in another country, in another state?
Mm-hmm.
The lawyer will know the circumstances. They're able to generally give the client a quote
mm-hmm.
as to what the attorney fee will be.
Right.
They certainly are able to give them a range of mm-hmm. price. If they're not able to give them exact price, they're able to give them some sort of range. And then, of course, the client has the option to either accept
mm-hmm.
the fact that they want this lawyer to proceed, or to say to themselves, well, no, I'm going to go talk to another lawyer, get
right.
another opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the process is not as difficult. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not as difficult as one might think. It's a fairly straightforward process, and I encourage all of our listeners to go through that process. Having a will is a very, very important thing to have.
Mm-hmm. So get that done.
Absolutely.
And with that, once you get that done, the other things start to fall in place,
particularly,
too.
Particularly, I mean, always get a will. But the more, you know, the more wonderful your life is, like, for instance, the more marriages you've had, the more children you've had from prior marriages, et cetera, things like that, make it all the more important mm-hmm. to kind of get things ironed out and laid down on paper.
All right. If you want to find out more about how to do that, you want to get in touch with the folks at Harvell and Collins, the right advice at the right time, at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.